You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Ricky Armendariz. He's talking to us about the show, The God's Way to Delight You, at Ruiz Healy Art. Ricky, thanks for being with me today.
Absolutely. And the gallery that just closed was Ruiz Healy Art in both Manhattan, and she also has a satellite space, a brick and mortar space here in San Antonio, Texas.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. The God's Wait to Delight in You. I know this. There's a number of lines in here that are coming from poems, right? Is the title of the show also from a poem?
It is. It's from a poem entitled "The Laughing Heart" by the deceased poet Charles Bukowski.
Right. And why that poem or that title?
You know, when I was a kid, I read a lot of Charles Bukowski and poems by Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan, and I was fascinated. I was drawn to all of these poets that seemed to encapsulate a view from below, right? Like the view of the underdog. And so I've always been attracted and interested to his poetry. It has a certain resonance, me against the world kind of attitude. And that poem in particular, at the very end, it says that line, and it's just a beautiful line.
It is a beautiful line. And, I'd like to talk about your relationship to poetry and writing, and you know, some of the work in here is, of course, much of the work is woodblock prints, and then also painting on the woodblock. It seems like many of these, where I'm used to seeing woodblocks or woodcuts or engravings is often in like fine editions of books of poetry. I mean, of course, not on the scale that you're doing it, but not that kind of size. But it also seems to work with that. Does the imagery also, do you think, because it's woodblock print, have a relationship to poetry?
Absolutely, and it's specifically that poem. I mean, a lot of the show centers around my ever-growing interest in cosmology and metaphysical things. I've always been drawn to representations of deities in artwork. When I was a kid, I used to walk around the hallways of the art museum in El Paso, Texas. And, you know, in the artwork, you had representations of Greek and Roman gods, usually turning themselves into animals to mate with humans, and to express their love for humans. And so there's a lot of those kinds of connections, both in the poetry, specifically that line. Bukowski's always mentioning the gods, plural. And so I think that's pretty interesting. And I'm always, interested in, and so I carry that over my work, right? There's a lot of animal imagery. I use a lot of anthropomorphism to talk about both personal things, autobiographical things, but also societal things. And then I use the surrogate of the animal to express those ideals.
That's so interesting. So let's talk about that, the animal and the ideals, because there's different relationships to each of these animals, right? And to be clear, these are woodblock prints, but when there's also oil on carved birchwood, you're taking the original block that you made the print with and then working on that block. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been from a few years back, maybe about, I don't know, 10 years ago, I had these blocks just sitting around my studio, and collectors would come in and they would be fascinated by the block. And, they would totally be disinterested in the paper and the paper product, and the block would just be sitting there. And so, in a roundabout way, it's my way of A, showing the process, but B, also, you know, exulting in the beauty, the aesthetic beauty of the wood grain. I use Baltic birch in these wood blocks. And then the final step after I do the addition in paper is canceling the block and then inking it one last time with probably a different color, more high-keyed color, so that it shows up against the dark of the staining of the wood. And then I show that as like a finished thing, like a finished object, almost like a sculptural, you know, a 2D object. And so it's a one of a kind, right? There's no others. It's just that's all there is with the block.
So when working on that block, though, that also ends the addition, right? There's no more prints coming off of that block.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's such an interesting way to kind of end the addition, right? Because there's different ways you can do it. You can just say it's limited. You can destroy the block, which seems a shame. But this is a way of also limiting that addition and making a new work of art that has the opposite composition, right? Well, not the opposite, but it's
the reverse.
You know, reverse, right? Now it's left to right as opposed to right to left or whatever it turns out to be. How do you like that flip? Because there's always that sort of surprise in printmaking of, you know, what will it be, right, when the print is reversed? But then working on the block, that's a, you know, itself, that's a whole different process, right? Now it's reversed. It's you were trying to do the opposite initially, right? So you're working with a whole different composition, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the beauty of art, I think. You know, I work into my method and my process several things that sort of subvert my control, and that's one of the things that subverts my control. Like when you flip it and it is what it is, like it has a whole different kind of feel and vibe and I guess the viewer perceives it differently. I love that. Like I love that it becomes like a whole new different thing, you know, especially with the two-tone, because my prints, as you've referenced, they're all one color for the most part. They're all like monochromatic, right? And so in the block, you get two colors, right? You get the staining of the dark wood, and then you get a high-key color, magenta, orange, or something like that over the block. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So let's talk about some of the imagery in here, because the imagery is also really interesting. And there's a few different types in here. There's one that are woodblock prints, and then there's one, the predicament, woodblock print, Hare and Hound Press. Is that because that one, to speak just about that one, the predicament, was that one printed by a press, or why the Hare and Hound Press?
Oh, okay. So the Hare and Hound Press is the name of the print shop that I use here in San Antonio, Texas. So they're real famous. It's a small printing press, but they do super, like, you know, blue chip artists that come to town for Art Pace residency, which is one of the, you know, best known and well-funded artist residencies in the U.S. here in San Antonio. So when, you know, Isaac Julian or Julie Meritu or Wangechi Mutu come to town, if they do anything print-related, Hare and Hound Press prints their stuff. So they're excellent. I mean, there's nobody better in town.
And but are they printing with you, for you, or you have total access to the press? Because a lot of times when those kind of artists come in, those big names, like blue chip artists, sometimes they're working on the block, sometimes they're drawing, other people are working, there's master printers all around them. I mean, I don't know exactly what this setup is, but somehow it's like
that's
that.
That's kind of the way I work with Hare and Hound. I bring the block to them, and then they proof it, and then we play with color. And if I don't like it, then I recarve it, and then they proof it and try different colors. And, you know, we tweak it, Like right now, I'm doing a print of the moon, and in embossed lettering in white on the white paper, they are doing text that says, "Do we see the same moon?" So it's going to be like kind of like ghost letters underneath the image of the moon that's going to be above it on white paper.
Right, blind embossed on there.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So, it must be such a pleasure working with a shop like that. Wow. So in the predicament, let's talk about that imagery, because we have an owl, a snake, the moon. This feels like there's a story in there.
You know, there's all, okay, so I used to think I was a poet and a writer when I was really young, and I write stories, right? I write lyrics, I write songs, not really necessarily to be published per se, but they're used as kind of an armature for me to get into the work. So I write these things, these stories, and I think about the story, and I try to kind of keep all of that, in a sense, away from the viewer a little bit. I love to sort of embed the work with aspects that are like kind of like breadcrumbs, right? That kind of lead you down the path of this idea that references a story, but maybe not a story you've ever heard. So the predicament, you know, to kind of maybe give a little bit away, is that a lot of times I use animal imagery, specifically owls and eagles and things like that, because native people use their feathers to pray to the gods, right? They have properties that indigenous people believe carry their prayers to the ears of the gods. And also these animals are kind of half in our world and half in the spirit world. And so I just love the mystery that is sort of embedded culturally in these animals. The owl is holding a torch, and the torch is like falling from his hand. I think it's holding an eagle, or excuse me, a snake. And so it's the choice between the snake or the torch. And the torch is, I guess, metaphorical for the idea of knowledge, right? This is Prometheus stealing fire and releasing knowledge to humanity, but never able to kind of put that knowledge, for good or for evil, like back into the genie's bottle, right? So it's kind of like those things that are involved in the work.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Thanks for giving a little of it away. I understand that, right? You'd rather people come up with their own stories, right? Or associations with the imagery. Like there's one, Fool for Love, which is a great one. There's a fox there, and there's banner, Fool for Love. That also seems to have thousands of words in it, or be part of a narrative, or something that we can connect with or not, right? And I'm not asking you to necessarily read this image, but that's part of what's happening there, right? This is one of the few with words in it, and it allows the viewer space to relate to or embody in some ways that looks like a fox, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a pretty skinny coyote, actually, but it's definitely a canid. The idea, I think, revolves around my interest. Well, that one specifically is referencing a song lyric, a hook in one of the songs that I've written. And I write these songs in the vein of conjunto and country music, Tejano music. And, you know, a lot of the themes are about lost love or unrequited love, loss of life and property and things like that. So I use those themes when I come up with the title and specifically for this idea of Fool for Love. I was literally thinking about Roy Orbison, and he's just always crying in his beer, you know, about you know, somebody who he misses. Right. And so, yeah, I think that that's kind of like what that's about. Also, the density of my imagery, specifically that one, you know, comes from, again, references of Greek and Roman gods in you know, Romantic period paintings. Their compositions were extremely dense with floral and fauna, and I tend to do that in my compositions.
I like that. Yeah, there is something about, right, that sort of, right, almost medieval, yeah, flora and fauna everywhere. There's another series, or maybe it's not a series, but there's at least three that are a bit different than the rest. There's couples in it, Novios, and there's Sagittarius, Scorpio, and Taurus. And this is quite different imagery than the rest of the show in some ways. This is the only one that isn't animals that I mean, they are animals, they're us, but they're humans in here. Can you tell me a little about these? This feels like a love story between three couples.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're all about love. Like in this particular case, you're right. The human animal is presented, but I have multiple bodies of work that I've been working on forever. And one of the bodies of work I've been calling Novios for a long time. And in this particular case, I go to bars and I, confront lovers in the bars. I buy them a drink. And then I ask them, you know, their astrological sign. And so that dictates the color that the work is printed. So Taurus, the representation of Taurus in terms of color is this kind of burnt orange. Scorpio is kind of like a chocolate brown. And Sagittarius is this kind of violet blue color. And I give them two prompts. One is the lady looks at me directly into the eyes and the gentleman looks away, and then we reverse it. The gentleman looks into my eyes and the lady looks away, and I take photographs of them, buy them a drink. They seem to be happy. And then I use that as source material to kind of build. I'm working my way through the whole astrological, alphabet. So,
and the whole astrological, all the symbols will all be couples?
Yes, absolutely. They'll be couples, and it's a little hard to notice, but in the upper left and right-hand corner of the composition is their astrological sign. So, and that, for me, ties into this idea of the supernatural and a belief in fate and fortune, and that ties into, belief systems that are very complementary to the belief in multiple gods, and multiple deities and multiple personalities for these deities. So I think it sort of all relates to this notion of love, whether it's, like emotional love or unrequited love or even like, acidic love, right? Love that's not supposed to be together.
Right, which is sometimes the most exciting, right?
Sometimes.
So I'd love to talk to you a little bit about this process, too, because these are really big blocks of wood, and the way you're cutting into them seems to be without necessarily going with the grain, almost like they're wood engravings, like you're working on an end grain, but you can't be, right? I'm talking about the technique here. It seems that it's very fluid. There isn't one direction of the grain, or is there? What's happening here in terms of cutting into the wood?
That's a great question, and I can tell that you have an art background. Well, the idea, the process, in the beginning I was using hand tools, and I got a certain look to the work. And I was actually using plywood. I switched to MDF. I experimented with that. I started using Dremels and turning my Dremel into a router. And now I use a two-handed standard router with a V-bit that cuts beautifully into the wood, and the RPMs of the machine are so fast that it cuts like butter into the Baltic birch. So I can go with the grain or against the grain, and there's literally no difference in the mark.
Wow, that's fascinating. And the Baltic birch, that's a birch veneer on plywood, right? That's why the sheets are so long.
Yeah, they're heavy. It's crazy. I use a Baltic birch that's marine grade. It's like 14 or 16 ply. It's so heavy. It's twice as heavy as the normal plywood. But I love it because it's beautiful. It stays straight, and then when you cut into it, you're never surprised with a void. Like, there's never a knot. It's all wood. It's incredible.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Right. And it will never warp or anything. Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, so exciting to talk to you about this show and these beautiful prints. I want to ask you one more question. What are you reading at the moment?
I've got a couple of books working right now. I just came back from Cuba. I did an art project in Cuba, so I've got a memoir by Fidel Castro entitled Che. It's pretty interesting. I didn't know a whole lot about Che, so I'm reading about him. And I'm a big fan of Sherman Alexie, so it's kind of like candy. I read Sherman Alexie a lot. And the particular book I'm reading right now is called Blasphemy. So it's a set of short stories, and some of them have been kind of redone in other books. He's one of those authors that kind of repeats some stories and puts them in other novels. Not exactly sure why he does that, but it's just like candy. You can read it, you can put it down, and then get into the studio and then pick it up again.
That sounds great. Yeah, I've never read that. Ricky, I want to thank you so much for sharing that and for talking with me today and putting together this beautiful show. Thanks so much for your time. Of course, there's more links here so listeners can investigate further. Thanks so much, Ricky.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.